I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. We are in Capitol Room 124. We're starting a little late today. It's a little, let's see, it's 2:02 p.m. I appreciate everyone's flexibility on their schedules. Today we have with us Representative Mears, Representative Armstrong, Representative Dibert, Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, Representative Quackatuck is back, Representative Rauscher, Representative McCabe, and myself, Chairman Tom McKay. I appreciate everyone being here today. We obviously have a quorum. Let's see. There are no elected officials in the audience unless they're hiding. I'd like to thank the staff today. We have Zach and Justin and Committee 8 Ed King. Appreciate the gents helping keeping us on track. Please silence your cell phones and we'll get started. So the only item on today's agenda is the consideration of Senate Bill 92. So SB 92 is now before the committee. This is the Senate version of what we had heard before as HB 98. And we've heard HB 98 three times in this committee. So my intent today is to hear the invited testimony and then set the bill aside. We've already heard an introduction to this bill along with the changes made in the Senate and have taken public testimony. I'd like to call the committee's attention to a response letter dated May 5th, 2023, from the Department of Natural Resources to questions posed by my office. You all should have a copy of this on your desk. Okay? I'd also like to invite Jim Walker from the Department of Natural Resources to put this information on the record. So, Mr. Walker, please come forward and take your seat at the table, and Tricia, please identify yourselves, state your affiliation, and I do have a few questions for you.
Thank you.
Or are you planning to go through the letter first, and then we'll ask questions? Is that how you'd like to do this, Mr. Walker?
Through the chair, Chair McKay, I was happy to answer any questions. I'm happy to expand upon anything that was provided in the written response. I think they're short and to the point, most of them, but I'm happy to expand upon any of that. Okay. I will be happy to proceed in either way. Through the record, for the record, Jim Walker with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. I am the section chief of the Public Access Assertion and Defense Team within the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. With me is Tisha Valentine, one of my colleagues from the PAD section.
Tisha Valentine. I'm sorry, I mispronounced your name earlier, Tisha. So let me ask a couple questions just to get us kicked off, Mr. Walker, that I have in my script here. I think the committee's familiar with this bill. It's called the Submerged Lands Bill. It deals with state land, and it does not deal with federal land. It does not deal with native land. It's pretty restricted to state land. So the first question is, would this bill have any impact on the state's land entitlement?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Representative McKay. This bill deals with state-owned submerged lands within federal areas, and that's it. Just within federal areas statewide. It specifically exempts in its definition of federal areas all privately owned lands, lands that may have been selected by, for example, a native corporation but not yet conveyed, or any other type of private property is exempted from that. To your question about how this affects the statehood's land entitlement, the short answer is it does not. The state of Alaska got land at the time of statehood in one of two ways. One, pursuant to the Equal Footing Doctrine of the United States Constitution, the Alaska Statehood Act, and the Federal Submerged Lands Act. That provided that the submerged lands under every navigable, in fact, entirely influenced water that was not subject to a pre-statehood withdrawal, vested immediately in the state at the date of statehood, right? So the state had to use none of its entitlement to obtain the title to those submerged lands. Rather, the entitlement would be to select uplands throughout the state. So because this legislation codifies those lands that the state was given as of the date of statehood within these federal areas, it does not in any way, shape, or form affect remaining statehood land entitlement.
Okay, very well. Next question is, would this bill have any impact on tribal land selections?
Through the chair, Chair McKay, no is the short answer. Within this legislation, we have, through working with both on the Senate side through Senator Giesel, the sponsor there, and through Senator Sadler's office, excuse me, Representative Sadler's office, Representative Sadler's office, have narrowly defined the areas that come within the purview of this legislation. We have specifically exempted all Native corporation lands, all village corporation lands, all Native allotments, and also any lands that may have been selected by a Native corporation but not yet conveyed. We have specifically exempted all of that from the purview of the bill. So nothing that is done within this legislation should have an impact upon conveyances pursuant to ANCSCA or otherwise that may be coming to various Native corporations, Native allottees, etc.
Okay, very well. Thank you for those answers. Next, I'd like to welcome Mr. Ron Opsahl to the committee via phone. Mr. Opsahl, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Opsahl is from the Department of Law. My question for you, Mr. Opsahl, can you tell us about how current law would apply if someone used the rivers named in this bill to trespass on private lands? And as I recall, there's a couple hundred rivers named in the bill, or maybe even more than that. So could you answer that question for us, Mr. Opsahl?
Yes. For the record, Ron Opsahl, Department of Law, through the chair. The law of trespass isn't changed by this bill at all. If an action is a trespass today, it will continue to be so with this bill. It's drafted carefully to really only apply to federal lands and excludes private lands. But if private lands were in there and someone used state submerged lands to access, and that was unauthorized, it would be a trespass. It would still be a trespass.
And we have current laws in place for trespassing.
Correct.
Okay, so the next follow-up question, Mr. Opsahl, is can you further explain how the law would apply to someone taking resources from those private lands while trespassing?
Again, for the record, Ron Opsahl, Department of Law, through the chair. The law on conversion of resources and trespass isn't changed. If someone accesses those private lands and takes resources unauthorized, it's going to continue to be a trespass, and there's continuing to be a potential action against that person, just as it is today.
All right, very well. There's not a representative from the Board of Game nor the Big Game Commercial Services Board joining us today. However, there are written responses from them in the May 5th letter on your desks. So are there any further questions from the committee for Mr. Walker or Mr. Opsahl? Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. I had some questions from a constituent about the statutory listing of all the waters, and if by needing to revisit this on a regular basis, that having just listing, statutory listing of waters, if that's going to cause us some issues in the future. I understand there's perhaps a couple more batches of listings that might be coming, but once we get that, is it going to be difficult to go through the legislative process for any updates to the list?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, the bill itself, as you know, contains an annual reporting requirement. The first tranche of waters that is contained within this bill are all of the waters in National Park Service areas, United States Forest Service areas, and one U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuge. That's the list today. If this legislation passes, next session, I would expect that you would see my colleague Tisha Valentine or someone else coming before the legislature and saying, we've now continued our work for the remainder of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service areas. We would respectfully ask the legislature to add those rivers to the codified list that is contained within this bill. The next year, we would hopefully tackle all BLM lands. Then there would be ongoing quality assurance and quality control. This is not a static list. It is a dynamic list. And we know that our ability to remotely understand rivers and whatnot seems to improve every year with improved aerial imagery, etc. So over time, what we have is going to just get better and better. Similarly, there is all sorts of other types of proceedings ongoing. For example, we are in litigation with the federal government on a number of rivers statewide. And when we conclude those pieces of litigation, I would then come back to the legislature and say, we've now finished litigating the Mulchatna River. And what we have included in the list is far too modest. The court confirmed our title much farther upstream. We would ask you to extend the definition on, you know, SWFA 894 or whatever the particular river was to reflect the reality of what happened in court. So it is going to be a dynamic thing. To the second part of your question, which is this going to be an onerous burden on the department to keep coming back year after year? I would respectfully submit that the onerous burden is the work that we're doing. It is the intensive photogrammic analysis of the rivers, the review of user accounts, the review of historical information that leads us to conclude that this particular river should be listed here. The coming forward on an annual basis with additions, I think, is far less onerous than the work that we're already conducting.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. So I can see, since we've got a few more batches of data coming, that for the foreseeable future that we will be revisiting this topic on a yearly basis. So maybe in a few years, once we've gotten through those staunches of through those bunches of information, that perhaps a yearly update process that doesn't have to go through the legislature is something that we should consider in a few years so that we can have a more streamlined process than coming back through us on a regular basis.
Through the chair, Representative Mears, that sounds great. To address that, you know, as we get this work done, I mean, there is a finite amount of areas that we're dealing with. These are these federal areas within the state of Alaska, these CSUs. That is the extent of this legislation. Once we've covered the remaining U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service areas and BLM lands, that's all that this statute does. And so hopefully we will have big lists, should this legislation pass, for the next couple of 3 years. But then after that, it would be a quality assurance, quality control, and it wouldn't be a very, and so what you're describing sounds to me like something that would be good to take up at that time.
So I think it's worth mentioning, is it correct, Mr. Walker, that this statute or this legislation would take care of an issue that's been troubling us since statehood?
Through the
We're
chair.
Finally getting to this point.
Through the chair, Chair McKay, absolutely. You know, with working with the sponsors of this legislation, we have attempted to narrow this in a rifled fashion to just talk about federal areas statewide, nothing else.
Okay.
Federal areas statewide. And our goal is to accelerate the process that has moved at glacial speed heretofore. Here we are, decades after statehood, and only a tiny fraction of the navigable waters, tidally influenced waters, and the corresponding submerged lands have been quieted in the state's title. Only a tiny fraction. By taking this step and essentially doing what the federal government should have done all along, we are claiming for Alaska at this date its birthright, what it should have received at the time of statehood. One of the things that we're hoping to do with this legislation, if it passes, is to work closely with our congressional delegation to adopt corresponding federal legislation or federal administrative action to confirm the work that this legislature would have done. And to, at long last, bring some closure and certainty as to who owns what in these federal areas. Because good land management can only follow a clear understanding of who owns what and whose jurisdiction, and where one party's jurisdiction begins and the other party's jurisdiction begins.
Well, it certainly seems to make perfect sense. Representative Rauscher, do you have a question? No. Okay. I thought you tapped my arm. Okay. Does anybody else have a question?
Representative Diver?
I see you got a lot of notes on your.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Walker. I guess my question is Mendenhall River and Mendenhall Lake. Why were they pulled off of the list, from the last time? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Diver. Senator Keel on the Senate version had recommended that the two be removed because there is active litigation on those two rivers. And we understand that, you know, the list that is contained within this legislation corresponds with an interactive map that anyone can use on the Alaska State website, right? And we don't want to put citizens in the position where they, against their will, end up becoming the next John Sturgeon, right? They somehow find themselves, you know, crosswise with federal authorities when the federal government says, we own it, and the state says, we own it. So we removed that from the list temporarily, pending the outcome of that litigation, so that individual citizens who are recreating there or whatever don't find themselves caught between a dispute between the federal government and the state and caught between that rock and hard place.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Follow up, Rep. Diver.
Are there any other bodies of water, submerged waters, that are under litigation, or how many? Thank you.
Yes. In terms of statewide, we have a number of litigations pending. In many cases, the areas being litigated do not have the same degree of public usage as Mendenhall Lake, which is very close and, you know, to the city of Juneau, and so it has that proximity to the population center. Because of the higher degree of usage, it was called out for special treatment. Other ones that are in litigation include the Mulchatna River, the Chilicadrotna River, Turquoise Lake, Twin Lakes, and others. However, the level of use that they see is exponentially less than we see with Mendenhall.
Okay.
Thank you. I hope to see Mendenhall Lake soon.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Walker or Mr. Opsahl today? All right. Seeing none, then we thank you, Mr. Walker, Ms. Valentine, and Mr. Opsahl for your participation today. To the committee, please submit any amendments to SB 92 to my office by 10 o'clock on Wednesday, May 10th, and we'll hold SB 92 in committee. So in closing, there is one other item of business. I need to make sure that I do not forget to wish Representative Diver a happy birthday and try to embarrass her completely in front of another public meeting.
No,
happy birthday. Yeah, no Raven calls and resources. I'm sorry, we can't allow that. So seeing no other business, thanks everyone for being here. Our next committee meeting will be on Wednesday, May 10th at 1 p.m., of course, subject to how long we go on the floor that day. So we'll take this up again on Wednesday. So with that, our meeting is adjourned at 2:23.